Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. So good to have you with us. Well, I woke up this morning with the idea our lead hour would be focused on yesterday's testimony by the four legal scholars before the House Judiciary Committee. And we will, of course, take that up to understand better where we are. But we have breaking news from this morning. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi came out and made this statement about the future of the Democratic impeachment plan.
The president's actions have seriously violated the Constitution, especially when he says and acts upon the belief. Article 2 says I can do whatever I want. No. His wrongdoing strikes at the very heart of our Constitution, a separation of powers, three co-equal branches, each a check and balance on the other. A republic, if we can keep, said Benjamin Franklin. Our democracy is what is at stake. The president leaves us no choice but to act because he is trying to corrupt once again the election for his own benefit. The president has engaged in abuse of power, undermining our national security and jeopardizing the integrity of our elections. His actions are in defiance of the vision of our founders and the oath of office that he takes to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Sadly, but with confidence and humility, with allegiance to our founders and a heart full of love for America, today I am asking our chairman to proceed with articles of impeachment.
Nancy Pelosi this morning speaking at the U.S. Capitol, the House Speaker, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, the Republican from the Bakersfield area, held his own news conference and included this statement.
This morning I listened to Speaker Pelosi give us historical references. The one that she skipped was Alexander Hamilton when he wrote, "There will always be the greatest danger that the decision to use the impeachment power would be driven by partisan animosity instead of real demonstrations of innocence or guilt." Today is the day that Hamilton warned us. Today, with the Speaker's announcement, she has weakened this nation.
That's House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, the Republican from Bakersfield, responding to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's statement this morning that she is directing the House Judiciary Committee to draft articles of impeachment on which the entire House of Representatives would vote. This appears to put it back on that quick timeline that Democrats had earlier spoken about, having a vote on impeachment by Christmas. With us, congressional reporter for The Wall Street Journal, Siobhan Hughes. Siobhan, thank you very much for being with us. First of all, the timing of this. What's believed to be behind the House Speaker coming out with this morning?
Well, today is one day after the House Judiciary Committee heard from four different witnesses, three of them called by Democrats, and the three Democratic witnesses said it was absolutely clear that Donald Trump's conduct was impeachable. Moreover, they said the 2020 elections would be at risk if Congress did not act now because there was every indication that Donald Trump was willing to solicit foreign interference in the 2020 election after Russia gave him a boost in 2016. And so Democrats, for that reason, for that rationale, want to act quickly. Of course, there are also 2020 electoral politics behind this, and they would like to wrap things up and clear their plate to be able to focus on the presidential election next year.
Siobhan, do you know if the House Speaker and her team were canvassing among the party to determine how many Democratic defections there might be on an articles of impeachment vote?
So I don't know that for sure. And in fact, a lot of the canvassing was done earlier when there was a resolution in which every House Democrat endorsed proceeding with an impeachment inquiry. And the thinking is that she will largely keep all of those Democrats on board. Nancy Pelosi is known for her ability to count votes. She doesn't proceed with something like this unless she's pretty sure that she has it. And so that is the likely status right now.
Also, I was wondering about the timetable. Does this make it likely the articles would be presented to the full Senate and a vote taken before Christmas?
So the full Senate trial is not likely to happen until next year in January. What we learned yesterday is that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has basically blocked out January. There is nothing really on his calendar in the thought that that's when a Senate trial would occur.
All right. I was curious, though, about the vote by the House. Is it likely that that occurs before Christmas?
Yes, it is likely that occurs before Christmas. Members have been told, actually, to keep December 21st and 22nd, which are a Saturday and a Sunday, open in case there are votes that need to be taken then. But the expectation is that the impeachment vote would likely come in that third week of December. So we're saying by December 20th, 21st, or 22nd.
All right. And as I understand, there is a hearing that has now been scheduled for Monday by the House Judiciary Committee. Do you know what will be included in that?
Yes. So Republican and Democratic counsel for the House Intelligence Committee will be presenting before the House Judiciary Committee. Republicans and Democrats drafted separate reports on the president's interactions with Ukraine and what they thought. Democrats obviously found wrongdoing and abuse of power. Republicans saw an innocent drive that grew out of President Trump's general concerns about Ukrainian corruption.
All right. And this despite the fact that the House Speaker is already giving direction to drop the articles of impeachment. Could this speak to the issue of how comprehensive charges might be against the president? Because it seemed like the House Speaker focused pretty tightly on the Ukrainian quid pro quo allegations. But might they put obstruction that some see in the Mueller report? Would there be potentially a decision about how broad those articles would be coming out of Monday?
So the Monday hearing will help illuminate that question, but it will not be decided at the Monday hearing. But you are correct that while the Ukraine interaction is central to the impeachment inquiry, it's not exclusive. And there is a chance that obstruction of justice, the president's alleged effort to obstruct the Mueller probe that was documented in the Mueller report, could be part of the articles of impeachment.
And is there the thought that the broader the articles of impeachment, the greater the risk that more Democrats defect from voting for impeachment, that the two are fairly closely linked?
Well, actually, there could be votes on individual articles of impeachment. You don't have to vote on all of the articles as a single package. And if that were the case, some Democrats in difficult races could demonstrate their moderation by voting for some articles but against others. And so there could be a political incentive for Democrats to split the articles up into various categories.
We're talking with Wall Street Journal congressional reporter Siobhan Hughes. Siobhan, I know you're not covering the White House. You're focused on Congress, but do you have any details to share with us about yesterday, the White House counsel's meeting with Republican senators to talk about the strategy for a Senate trial?
Yes. So the big thing that the White House lawyers would like is the ability to call their own witnesses and to question them in a Senate trial. In other words, to have their say. Mitch McConnell is right now, or he's planning to negotiate the terms of a Senate trial with Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. However, he said if he's unable to reach an agreement on process, he's going to go it alone, try to get 51 votes from among his Senate Republicans. And so it seems likely that Mitch McConnell would figure out a way to accede to the White House request.
And one of the issues of contention, I assume, between the parties in the Senate is over whether Republicans will be calling witnesses. Is that something that it's anticipated Chuck Schumer would fight, particularly if Republicans want to call Hunter Biden or the whistleblower to testify?
Or a third person, Adam Schiff. That is exactly a piece of it. Those are very contentious witnesses, and you would expect that to be a big fight between the two parties.
So would the issue be having any witnesses whatsoever versus opening it up like a full-on trial where you have testimony of witnesses coming in, not just counsel on both sides debating based on testimony that occurred in the House?
There are a number of issues, but for example, if you bring Adam Schiff Schiff in. That implicates some constitutional provisions, that the speech and debate clause, that deal with whether or not you can, the ways in which you can hold a congressman accountable. Bringing Hunter Biden in is something that Democrats would likely view as a distraction, really a tactic to take away the focus. The parameters of that fight are set, but the meat of it hasn't been revealed yet. But you can see where the tensions would arise.
All right, Siobhan, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it very much.
Good to talk to you.
Busy day on Capitol Hill. Wall Street Journal congressional reporter Siobhan Hughes with us on Air Talk. Also with us is Sean Walsh, Republican political analyst. Sean, your thoughts about House Speaker Pelosi's announcement today and the near certainty now that we'll have a vote on articles of impeachment.
I don't think it's a surprise at all. This was going to happen. It was only a matter of when it was going to happen. And I think it's a matter of timing. So the question is it done before Christmas or the articles, or is it done after Christmas? But as the Wall Street Journal reporter said, Nancy Pelosi has counted votes. It's almost an imperative now from a Democratic political perspective to put forward articles of impeachment. And it's equally a Republican imperative to try and make sure that the president is not convicted and removed from office because of the disastrous political consequences that would have for the party. And then tie all in the fact that you look at most of the polls and nobody's moved. The Democrats mostly want to see impeachment. There's some Republicans that do, but most don't. And so we are where we are.
What's your thought about the breadth of the articles of impeachment? If you were advising Democrats from their standpoint, should they keep it more narrow on Ukraine, or should it be broadened to attempt to show a pattern of malfeasance by the president?
So if I was a Democratic strategist, I would probably put 5 or 6 articles up. And as the Wall Street Journal reporter said, she's right. Actually, in the Clinton impeachment, there were some articles that were put up and some members of Congress voted for them and some didn't. So I think you get to the basic issues. You'll get down to 3 or 4: obstruction, and then, you know, trying to campaign finance violations, et cetera. And I would, if I were a Democrat, try and bootstrap in the Mueller report. There's an awful lot of Democrats who are still angry about that they didn't get him. And that went to the heart of the issue, what they talk about political interference in our election. So if I were a Democrat political strategist, I would definitely try and drag obstruction justices from the Mueller report into the process.
Sean, looking ahead to the Senate trial, which appears an almost certainty at this point, how vigorous a defense do you think the president's team should mount here? Or should this be something they just try and get it over quickly, take a vote, Republican majority, and move on without having removal?
Both. I would put as vigorous a defense as possible up without actually putting up all the White House folks and the other folks that the Congress has asked for and the White House has denied, because I think that opens a whole other can of worms. I think their goal is to try and keep it exactly where it is, to have the Democrats on the committees now continue to throw carpet tacks and marbles and smoke and mirrors out in front of this process to muddy the waters and not give people a clear sense of where things are, and then go to the Senate and the Senate votes not to convict. So that's the Republican play. I don't see anything changing fundamentally unless, and it could happen, that somebody else comes forward with some other big bombshell or new piece of information that could change some of the Republicans' attitudes in the Senate. But so far, that hasn't happened.
We're talking with Sean Walsh, Republican political analyst. I want to go back to yesterday's first of the open hearings in front of the House Judiciary Committee. Jonathan Turley, the lone legal representative chosen by the Republican minorities professor at George Washington University School of Law, has been with us many times on Air Talk. This was from his opening statement.
I'm not a supporter of President Trump. I voted against him. My personal views of President Trump are as irrelevant to my impeachment testimony as they should be to your impeachment vote. President Trump will not be our last president, and what we leave in the wake of this scandal will shape our democracy for generations to come. I'm concerned about lowering impeachment standards to fit a paucity of evidence and an abundance of anger. I believe this impeachment not only fails to satisfy the standard of past impeachments, but would create a dangerous precedent for future impeachments.
That was the one of the four legal scholars testifying yesterday in that day-long coverage you heard live here on KPCC. Jonathan Turley of George Western University School of Law. Let me bring into the conversation the president of Emerge America, a national organization identifying and training Democratic women who want to run for political office, Amanda Renteria. So Amanda, Turley was the only one of the professors to express serious caution about proceeding with the evidence that's there. Your response to the argument he made?
Yeah, the words he used were lower the impeachment standards. And I think what's interesting about it is when you ask even Republican members about the abuse of power when using the presidency for political gain, using a foreign enemy to do so, everyone agrees about the seriousness of that. And so to hear him call out it as lowering the standards, that this isn't it, I think just really didn't work well. But I'll also say this, Professor Feldman, who was also one of the panelists, talked about the fact that he actually wrote an article saying that that the impeachment process was really ridiculous until the phone call. And I think that part didn't get as much as attention as it should have, because in many ways he came at it with the same kind of approach as Turley, which is, listen, I'm not pro, I'm not against, but here, this very key fact changed my mind. And I thought that interaction with him and Representative Gatz, Matt, was really an important part of the conversation last night.
Much, it seemed, of Turley's critique was about the speed of it and the lack of having additional details about the allegation of a quid pro quo. We're going to take a break. We'll continue with our guest, Sean Walsh, Republican political analyst Amanda Renteria of Emerge America. She was the national political director for Hillary Clinton's 2016 campaign. We'll also talk with Claremont McKenna College professor of politics Jack Pitney. Many more guests throughout the course of this hour. We're talking about this morning's announcement that articles of impeachment will move forward against President Trump, as well as yesterday's legal testimony before the Judiciary Committee. We'll be back in 1 minute on Air Talk. Just about 4 hours ago, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, in a nationally broadcast statement, said that she is directing the House Judiciary Committee to draw articles of impeachment against President Trump. There would be an introduction of this to the full House of Representatives with a vote on impeachment expected to occur right before Christmas. And the House Speaker obviously believing she has all the votes that she needs with minimal Democratic defections to accomplish the impeachment of the president. Barring any sort of unforeseen developments, it would appear that the impeachment of President Trump is all but a done deal. Joining us to talk about the latest developments, Jack Pitney, professor of politics at Claremont McKenna College. Professor, good to have you with us again. Do you see anything at this point potentially derailing the impeachment of the president?
No, I think it's almost certain that the House of Representatives is going to impeach President Trump. A lot less likely that the Senate will convict him. That's a conventional wisdom, but I think in this case, the conventional wisdom is accurate.
All right. The president was tweeting earlier today about his criticism of Nancy Pelosi. Said, for example, the do-nothing radical left Democrats have just announced they're going to seek to impeach me over nothing. They already gave up on the ridiculous Mueller stuff, so now they hang their hats on two totally appropriate, perfect, he puts in parentheses, phone calls with the Ukrainian president. This will mean that the beyond important and seldom used act of impeachment will be used routinely to attack future presidents. This is not what our founders had in mind. The good thing is the Republicans have never been more united. We will win. Jack, your thoughts on the president's tweets?
Well, I think we're going to hear a lot more of that. As far as the intentions of the founders, Jonathan Turley, who was actually the Republican witness yesterday, a few years ago, made a case that that offenses don't have to be indictable, that the framers had a somewhat expansive view of what impeachment should be for. And in fact, he testified in favor of the impeachment of Bill Clinton. So I, as a matter of scholarship and law, I don't think that argument carries a lot of weight, but there are a substantial number of people who agree with him. The polls indicate that public opinion, as Sean Walsh mentioned before, is not likely to change very much.
And you think that's true even in a Senate trial, that because the president's case is going to be laid out in a way beyond what the Republican committee members were able to do in the House, you don't think that that might give a boost to the president?
Not very likely. A few weeks ago, there was a poll for National Public Radio and Marist, and 65% of Americans said they couldn't imagine any information or circumstances that would change their minds. So I don't think the needle is going to move a great deal in the polls.
Jack, thanks very much. I know you're very busy. Thank you for joining us this morning. We appreciate it. Claremont McKenna College Professor of Politics Jack Pitney joining us on Air Talk. Let me go back to Amanda Renteria, president of Emerge America. Amanda, what do you think is the biggest exposure politically for Democrats in this process?
You know, I think it's this going on a little too long, or they're not being consistent, new, and interesting news. And I say interesting because it does have to grab people's attention so that you actually take the time to learn and understand. You know, I remember when this first started and everyone said, oh, you're going to do impeachment hearings. No one cares. No one's going to engage. This doesn't matter. But I have to say it did move the polls. And the constant drumbeat does make a difference over time. And as we've seen in the House, there's been some very interesting witnesses that have come up and have really grabbed the attention of the public. And so as this process moves forward, it is important for Democrats to find ways to engage and then use that engagement to educate people about what has happened and whether or not they can actually decide whether it's an impeachable offense. And I think never losing sight of the idea that this is an education process, because it is a political process.
Were you concerned at all yesterday, three of the four legal scholars that the Democrats chose were, you know, very clearly argued for impeachment, thought the law completely justified it, and in fact, in a couple of cases, almost demanded impeachment. And then, you know, a couple of the professors had been multi-time contributors to Democratic candidates. Do you have any concerns about how that might have been perceived by unaffiliated voters?
Sure, I can. If you just tuned in yesterday and saw the intensity on that panel, it might have struck you as a little bit just a little bit tough. And you would have said, wait a second, give me some time to get to know what's going on here before this intensity happens. For anyone who's been watching each of these hearings, you can see the increasing intensity. And so I think the point about was this too much, for anyone tuning in for the first time, it might have been. And I think that's a piece of this process that Democrats need to think about, is how do you lay out a story from the beginning to the end so you can take people along, whether you tuned in today or you've been tuned in for the last couple of months. And I think that's why this quick process now, you know, I think for a lot of people it doesn't feel quick, but now that we're moving into a vote, there's going to be a moment there of laying out the story again, and it's going to be important to start from the beginning and really bring people along the process so that people don't get shut out by an immediate intensity.
Amanda, good to talk with you again. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Amanda Renteria, who directed Hillary Clinton's campaign as political director back in 2016. Let me go back to Sean Walsh, Republican political analyst. Seemed to me, Sean, that Republicans had a bit of an advantage there because they actually chose a legal scholar in Turley who didn't support President Trump. So they chose someone who thought the case hadn't been made yet for impeachment, but who wasn't a fan of the president. That kind of pulled them out of the more partisan part that the other three legal scholars sort of fell into.
Well, Larry, I commend you for paying attention to that, because that's exactly right. Look, I've done set up hearings before in my past governmental and political life, and set up other sorts of panels discussions. And you always want to make sure that the people you put forward can't be impeached, meaning their character or their bias brought forward. And there are hundreds, probably thousands of law professors throughout the country that haven't given money to Democrats or anyone, who haven't, you know, taken any political positions that they could have put forward. So I think it was just a tactical mistake on their part. So they got the right passionate people to say, yes, absolutely, he should be impeached, but they used the wrong people to go forward with that message because of their perceived bias. And you're absolutely right. Turley was the right guy for sending that message forward. And if you listen to Turley's issues, he actually didn't say that Trump shouldn't be impeached per se. He just said it needed more investigative time, and it needed to, instead of being rushed forward just by a committee. So I think the Republicans were tactically smart and in some respects strategically smart. And it's showing in the polls a little bit, because now Republicans feel, you know, our guy's under attack, our person's under attack. And he's actually getting stronger with Republicans right now, because it looks like a partisan attack as opposed to a substantive presentation on the facts of the matter.
Sean, good to talk with you again. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Larry.
He is a former advisor to California Governors Pete Wilson and Arnold Schwarzenegger, former White House staffer in the administrations of Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush. Sean Walsh with us on Air Talk. We continue with our coverage of yesterday's House Judiciary Committee, first of their open hearings, four legal scholars talking about the legal case for impeachment of the president. Then the big news this morning from House Speaker Nancy Pelosi that she's directing the House Judiciary Committee to draft articles of impeachment to present them against the president to the full House of Representatives, with a schedule that would appear to put the vote right before Christmas Day. With us to talk about the legal aspects, joining me is Prathipan Gulasekaram, professor at Santa Clara Law, who specializes in constitutional law. Professor Deep, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it. Let's go back to yesterday and that testimony to bolster the case for impeachment. Did you think that it was weakened at all by the partisan support of the democratically chosen professors?
Well, it certainly, it seemed to me, this is not my pay grade, but certainly might have rhetorically been undermined some of the case for the Democrats. I will say, though, that when you're looking at Professors Feldman, Gerhardt, and Pamela Karlan, those are the three of the most respected scholars on impeachment and election law in the United States, bar none. And I think even scholars who are more conservative would acknowledge them as the authority on those issues.
Yeah, that's a very good point, that this was specifically an area of law that they had spent considerable time on. Let's listen to Professor Pamela Karlan, Stanford School of Law professor. Here she talked about what she learned from reading transcripts of the testimonies of the House Intelligence Committee hearings over the past few weeks.
Everything I read on those occasions tells me that when President Trump invited, indeed demanded, foreign involvement in our upcoming election, he struck at the very heart of what makes this a republic to which we pledge allegiance. That demand constituted an abuse of power. Indeed, as I want to explain in my testimony, drawing a foreign government into our elections is an especially serious abuse of power because it undermines democracy itself.
Professor Karlan was also questioned not just about her campaign contributions to Democrats, but about the previous comments that she had made. I believe it was on a podcast on which she was interviewed, and she was talking about how liberals tend to spread out and conservatives tend to cluster. David Encino says Professor Karlan and those quotes may have reelected President Trump because, along along with the joke about Baron Trump. He can be named Baron, but he can't be made a Baron by the president. Dave says this is the kind of stuff that angers the GOP base and makes people vote. You can share your comments on the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. We're talking with Professor Deep Gulasekram of Santa Clara Law's constitutional scholar. Professor, in the arguments that you heard yesterday, the three esteemed professors the Democrats chose, the one esteemed professor that Republicans chose, where did you think on balance the stronger case was made?
I think that Professors Feldman, Carlin, and Gerhardt had the stronger claim on the history of impeachment, what it requires of the legal standard, the constitutional standard to impeach, but also on the facts itself. I heard Professor Turley, who is also fairly well respected in this field, argue that, as you pointed out, this is not, it's not necessarily saying not impeach, but he thinks the case hasn't been proven. It's hard for me to see, based on the testimony that's already been given, the evidence that's already been brought to light, what other evidence we need in order to substantiate the charge. The fact that certain people, including John Bolton, Mick Mulvaney, Rudy Giuliani, haven't heard their testimony. The reason we haven't heard their testimony is because of the assertion of executive privilege, right? And so you can't have it both ways, that you both need that testimony, yet the executive is preventing those people from testifying.
But Charlie's argument, if I understood it, was that going through the courts is the part of the process here, that the president isn't immediately legally obligated to turn over members of his staff or all documents simply because Congress requests them, and it's the court's jobs to arbitrate that. You disagree with that?
No, it certainly can be. It certainly, some of these issues could be taken to the court system that might take a significant time. But in fact, I think that's a little bit of a distraction because it seems to suggest that you absolutely need the testimony of these people in order to substantiate the case. We already have, if you look at the evidence already presented, people have direct knowledge, firsthand knowledge of what happened that have made the case. It certainly, if you think about Bolton, Mulvaney, Giuliani, that would be the icing on the cake. And if I can strain the analogy, the cake, however, has already been baked by the evidence that's already been gathered.
We're talking with Santa Clara Law Professor of Constitutional Law, Deep Gulasekram. We'll continue our conversation with other legal scholars. Yeah, we have our own legal scholars we assemble, not just the House Judiciary Committee, and our producers do a pretty good job, if I say so on their behalf as well. We're talking about yesterday's House Judiciary Committee testimony by the four legal scholars, as well as today's big news, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi directing the House Judiciary Committee to draft articles of impeachment against President Trump to be presented to the full House for a vote, most likely before Christmas. It's Air Talk on 89.3. We'll be back in less than 2 minutes. Wonderful to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Hope your day is going great. We're talking about yesterday's day-long House Judiciary Committee testimony from the four legal scholars, as well as Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker's direction to the Judiciary Committee today to move forward with articles of impeachment. This makes it all but certain that President Trump will be impeached. Now, obviously, there could be things unforeseen that change that equation, but at this point, with the House Speaker is very well known for making sure that she has the votes, directing the judiciary to do this, it would seem almost certain it's going to the full House and that there the votes are there for Democrats to impeach the president. But of course, a totally different story in the Senate, where the president will be able to present his defense, uncertain whether additional witnesses will be called, but certainly advocates for the president will be able to present the evidence that they think shows that what he did at the very least was not impeachable, if not totally perfect, as President Trump himself says. I just want to share a couple listener comments that are on the page. Steve writes, I do agree with Professor Turley that the Democrats should have subpoenaed every active witness, including John Bolton, and have the court processes rolling along even as they continue. It was an error by the Dems not to subpoena Bolton. That they have not done full due process may come back to bite them in the Senate. On the other hand, John Bolton and the whistleblower may be waiting for exactly the Senate trial to drop some carpet bombs on President Trump. You can share your comments on the AirTalk page, kpcc.org, where Jeffrey writes, former U.S. prosecutor Ken White made an excellent point on the All the President's Lawyers podcast. He noted the factual evidence to date meets or exceeds standards used by grand juries and federal prosecutors to issue criminal indictments. Let me bring another legal scholar into our conversation from Villanova University School of Law in Pennsylvania, Professor Tuan Samahan. Professor, thank you for being with us. Let me ask you first about our listener Jeffrey's quote of Ken White. Do you think that if this were a non-presidential case that were presented to a grand jury, the evidence is sufficient to indict?
I think it could be, yes. In fact, as clearly stated in the Constitution, treason, bribery, other high crimes and misdemeanors where bribery means the criminal law, common law sense of bribery at the time of founding, the constitutional sense of it. And I think that could encompass not only officials that seek bribes, but also someone who offers a bribe. And so I think that could certainly be the case. It comes down to a question of how the Senate wants to weigh the credibility of the witnesses and the statements that have been made so far. But certainly it could be.
And do you think that that should be the standard used for impeachment, largely a legal standard? Or given that, you know, as most people say, this is more a political than a legal act, is that extremely important, the legal side?
Well, I think it is a quasi-legal. It resembles a legal process. And so the impeachment precedent is going to be important. What legally is a crime is going to be important. That isn't to say that it's strictly speaking a legal process. I think what was most important to the Stuarts and Stuart England was a distinction between what was lawful and what was unlawful conduct as judged by the law as it existed at the time. That is what's most important. So I think it's possible to have a non-indictable offense that is still nonetheless a violation, a breach of fiduciary duty that's owed to the American people, that too could become a high crime and misdemeanor. But again, I'm going to resist the implication that it's wholly a political process or that it ought to be, that anything the House says is an impeachable offense is an impeachable offense. I disagree strongly with that. I think that this is a quasi-legal proceeding.
All right. Professor Samahan, I also wanted to ask you about bribery, because, you know, that obviously is a defined legal term for a crime. And based on the evidence in the transcript of the phone call, the testimony that we had in the House Intelligence Committee, for those who listened to the call, as well as other associative conversations, do you think that this fits the legal definition of bribery?
Well, again, I think it's certainly enough to charge the offense, which is what the House is doing at this point. It is not trying the president. The sole power to try the impeachment will be the Senate's prerogative, and the Senate will be the one to make that determination. The senators are both judge and jury in that sense. And so I guess what my view of it, the weight of the evidence might be, probably doesn't matter beyond saying that I think there's enough there for them to certainly impeach. I think the House will do that very quickly with alacrity, and it will then go on to the Senate.
All right. And what is going to be likely in articles of impeachment? I understand they could be more narrowly charged, and they can take a vote and choose to exclude some that might be initially presented. But essentially, how is that formed?
Well, so you can have multiple articles of impeachment. Each of the articles of impeachment will be voted on individually. I think we're likely to see at least one of the articles of impeachment that was used against Richard Nixon brought forward. and that's going to be with respect to Nixon's failing without lawful cause or excuse to produce papers and things that were directed by the House Judiciary Committee to be produced. I think that is likely to form a basis for one of the articles. Again, it may be the case that there will be articles that are going to be stretch articles that that you know, maybe we see an appearance of something relating to the Mueller investigation. Again, those are questions that are political judgments that are going to be in the hands of the House Judiciary Committee.
All right. Let's listen again to Professor Noah Feldman, Harvard Law professor. He addressed the issue yesterday in the hearing about, you know, responded to the claim, well, the defense aid to Ukraine was delivered without there having to be the reciprocal announcement of an investigation into the gas company Burisma or any allegations of attempts to influence the 2016 election from Ukraine.
If the President of the United States attempts to abuse his office, that is a complete impeachable offense. The possibility that the President might get caught in the process of attempting to abuse his office and then not be able to pull it off does not undercut in any way the impeachability of the act. If you'll pardon a comparison, President Nixon was subject to articles of impeachment preferred by this committee for attempting to cover up the Watergate break-in. The fact that President Nixon was not ultimately successful in covering up the break-in was not grounds for not impeaching him. The attempt itself is the impeachable act.
So I'd like to hear a response to Professor Feldman's contention from John Malcolm, Vice President of the Institute for Constitutional Government and the Director of the Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Heritage Foundation, conservative think tank based in D.C. Mr. Malcolm, thank you for being with us. Your response to Professor Feldman's contention?
Yeah, look, I will actually harken back to a comment that we heard just a few minutes ago from Professor Gulasekram, which is Noah Feldman clearly believes that the cake is fully baked. I actually think that there was no disagreement among the panelists about the standards for impeachment, about, you know, what would constitute bribery, high crime, you know, treason, bribery, or other high crime and misdemeanor. If you believe that the president clearly worked against the national interests of the United States and he did it purely for a personal benefit to help him with the 2020 election, then, you know, your views have been strengthened by these hearings. And if you believe that this is not a fully baked cake, but it is a bunch of messy batter at the bottom of a pan, and that, you know, the president is the person who gets to set foreign policy, that he had a more jaundiced view about the Ukrainians and their involvement in the 2016 election, a more jaundiced view about whether they have really turned over a new leaf in terms of investigating corruption, I think he actually has a very decent factual basis on both counts to have that jaundiced view, then this is, you know, these are factual disputes. I think that these hearings, including yesterday's hearing and all of the hearings before the House Intelligence Committee, have changed nobody's view. They have hardened everybody's view. And it is inevitable that he is going to be impeached along an almost exclusively party line vote. And it is inevitable that he will be acquitted, again, almost exclusively along a party line vote.
John Malcolm, thank you very much. Appreciate your being with us. Coming up, we're going to take a look back at the historical aspects of impeachment versus the one that's unfolding on Capitol Hill in these weeks currently. My thanks to Professor Deep Gulasekram, Santa Clara Law, Professor Juan Samahan of Villanova University School of Law in Philly. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. We have also a lot more coming up in the second hour, including good news for local sports fans about two venues, Angel Stadium and a new arena for the Clippers. We'll have that coming up after NPR News next hour. I'll be back in 1 minute. Great to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Hope your day's off to a strong start. Next hour, we're going to be talking about whether registered sex offenders should be screened out of dating apps. Currently, most dating app operators don't do that kind of screening. It's really left to the user of the app to research the person that they're going to get together with. We'll talk about whether that should change or not. But right now, our focus is on impeachment. A near certainty that House Democrats will impeach President Trump, that in the wake of this morning's announcement from House Speaker Nancy Pelosi that she's directing the House Judiciary Committee to draft articles of impeachment against President Trump. What's uncertain is how many different counts, how broad those counts would be, or whether it will be rather narrowly considered on the Ukraine contention of quid pro quo, whether Democrats think ultimately that is the better route to then prosecute in a Senate trial against the president, as opposed to having broader counts that might attempt to portray a pattern of behavior by the president that is harmful to the country's interests. Joining us now with a historical perspective from Southern Methodist University's Center for Presidential History, which he directs. He's also co-author of Impeachment, An American History, Jeffrey Engel. Sir, thank you for being with us again. Where we sit right now, is this at all comparable to previous impeachment processes?
Oh, yes, most definitely. It's good to talk to you again. And I think we're definitely in a comparable position because we have gotten to the point where it's very clear that the president is indeed going to be impeached. I think we are actually at the same stage when Richard Nixon decided that he was going to resign, in a sense of the articles of impeachment were being drawn up for him, and he wanted to essentially leave because he did not want to suffer the indignity of being impeached. He also, unlike President Trump, I believe, Richard Nixon was convinced that he was going to lose in the Senate. And we're at the same stage where President Clinton essentially resigned himself to fight back against the Republican decision to impeach him in the House when they held the majority. So we are essentially at a time that's actually, of all the examples that we have, that we've seen again and again, where the storm is just about to break, but it's clear that it's coming.
With yesterday's testimony from the four legal scholars, were there comparable hearings like that, either with Watergate or with Bill Clinton, where they sort of laid out the scholars where they thought the evidence led?
You know, yes and no. There were really comparable and wonderful for scholars, for future scholars, wonderful hearings that were held before Watergate ended and before Clinton's formal impeachment by the House, where they brought in the best scholars and historians and ethicists and people who worked on this issue from all different angles and had them explain exactly what the founders thought and what it meant and what impeachment could mean. And I got to tell you personally, this is an incredible resource. I mean, one thing that, future historians will be excited about is that they will go back in 25, 30 years when writing about this period and have four of the top legal minds in one session discussing with Congress people what impeachment meant. It's a wonderful resource and educational tool for the Congress, provided the Congress listens. And I think that one of the things that we saw yesterday is that minds seem to be pretty much made up on the congressional committees, despite anything that the various testimonies might offer.
Well, I also wonder about the process with the president being represented. I don't recall in Bill Clinton's impeachment process whether with the committee hearings, the Democrats were able to call any of their witnesses as a part of that. Republicans were not able to call their witnesses in the House Intelligence Committee hearings. What was it like with Clinton?
Well, before the formal impeachment, there was essentially a similar move by Democrats at the time to cast aspersions on the process. Senate Minority Leader Tom Daschle, who really with Richard Gephardt, who was the House Speaker, House Minority Leader, both Democrats, they decided that the best way to win their political fight was, in their words, to win by losing. That is to say, they wanted to scream and howl and cause as many different partisan votes as possible over what the speakers were, over what lunch might be. I mean, it didn't matter what the topic was. We want
well, lunch is important, right?
Yeah, well, and we want to show that there's a partisan divide because that we're going to go on the evening news. Now, granted, evening news was a little bit different back then than it is today. It wasn't quite as 24-hour, but they want to be able to go on the evening news and say, this is a partisan affair. Look, we had 19 party line votes. Now, most Americans wouldn't care necessarily that most of those votes were about, you know, procedural nonsense. And so we're seeing the same thing with Republicans, you know, claiming, you know, a variety of things such as today, such as, you know, this process is somehow malformed, that the president is not offered due process, which, by the way, he's not, according to the Constitution. This is not a legal case. This is a political case. And that we don't have the witnesses that we want, although there will be plenty of time for the Republicans and for President Trump to call whatever witness he wishes once the trial formally begins. This is exactly the same thing that Democrats said 25 years ago. So we shouldn't be surprised by it. And in fact, we should sort of welcome it because it tells us this is following somewhat of a pattern of partisanship rising above, if you will, you know, people's willingness to hear each other at this stage, because we're already, as I said, about to break.
Historian Jeffrey Engel with us. Before I let you go, sir, just briefly, with Bill Clinton's impeachment, once he was able to call witnesses and Democrats were able to have witnesses as well, did that change public opinion about the president, as you recall, and could the president this time around count on potentially some kind of a bump from being able to present a case?
You know, the truth is, the more in the Clinton case, the more the public heard the evidence, the more they were convinced that he should not be removed from office. It's not just that his approval ratings went up during this period because he was, you know, perceived by many to be doing a better job of managing things than his Republican opponents. But more importantly, people in 1999 argued over whether or not Clinton lying in a civil affair was a high crime. Was it an affair of state or was it a personal matter? And most Americans came down on the side the Senate ultimately did, which was that, yes, this was a crime, but it was not the kind of thing that you remove the president from office.
All right.
That's, I think, the key distinction that we're going to see going forward, because the type of crime that president, or type of offense, I should say, that President Trump is accused of is exactly the kind of high crime that the founders feared.
Jeffrey Engel, SMU, thank you, sir, for being with us. He directs SMU's Center for Presidential History. It's Air Talk on KPCC. Much more to come in the second hour. I'll tell you about it in a moment.